look around sorts of consciousness. One is smelling. Let it grow, let it become conscious. Sense of smelling. No, we shall be forgotten. Where is it? When you don't smell anymore, where is it? It's gone. Then it arises again. All types of consciousness arise and fall. Are you a guest here? Or a newcomer here? Yeah. Besides that a thing like incense smells lovely, rises our, lets arise our smell consciousness, I think it is a great aid for meditation. Has a wonderful atmosphere radiating. Smoke coming like clouds. Somehow they represent to me a great way of seeing impermanence. It moves. It develops in different patterns, is very subtle. Perhaps the movability of our own energies, one can recognize in it many things. So, along with the incense, there come other elements along which are helping us on this hard way of effort for meditation. For I believe by now we have found out that it is not that easy. Sitting and concentrating and keeping aware and sending my mind force again and again to the object. How many times have we failed? How many times have we become weak? How many times have we become discouraged. How many times have we gotten into anger, into reaction of a negative nature, either against myself or against the situation of sitting here, or even against the instructor or teacher, you may call, or the one who shares with you here. Many times, hardly are we able to count these times. Now, since we spoke of those elements which disturb and help us or are responsible for these weaknesses in us, for this inability to concentrate, there come also qualities and elements which are very helpful. And I chose for tonight three which we like perhaps to know a little closer and look into their nature. Look why they are able to help us. We all know of them. But since we are working with mind, with mental forces, with mentality, it is a good thing, it goes along with this, to go deeper into the understanding of these forces. In this case, of these forces, which are considered aids, helpers, great assistance for our practice. Maybe that far.
Shall I translate it?
Maybe it's not necessary.
I don't know if...
Say just...
Shall we go... if I should leave out tonight or... Vad tycker du, Jakob? Ska jag översätta?
Ja.
Jakob thinks I should translate. So.
Okay. Yes, he likes to get the fine subtleties between the lines.
I'll try.
Vi har funnit nu att det är inte lätt att meditera. Och hur många gånger har inte vårt sinne förlorat koncentrationen och uppmärksamheten på det vi mediterar på? Nu finns det tre hjälpsamma faktorer som kan hjälpa sinnet. Tre hjälpsamma mentala som kan hjälpa de mindet och mentala krafterna. Och hjälpa oss att gå djupare i förståelsen. Och dessa tre hjälpare är det ska vi få höra nu.
And the first one is that of that quality of the mind which is open, which is not fighting, which is not aggressive, but at the same time, which is not attracting either, or grasping, or liking. It knows either dislike or like. A very neutral mental force, mental quality. We call it patience. Patience.
Den första är tålamod. Tålamod är en sån här sinneskvalitet som hjälper oss. Tålamodet är öppet och inte aggressivt. Men samtidigt har det ingenting att göra med habegär, sån där sympati som tar åt sig, utan det är liksom observerar och ser.
We usually speak in terms like it is a possession. I have patience. I have no patience. But seldom do we give time and allowance to experience this mentality as a force within us of a penetrative nature, in which you sense throughout your being a giving up, a not striving, in not provoking, in not proving of endurance. We just very quickly use this term, I have patience or I have no patience. And that moment, even if we would state I have patience, I miss the experience of it, the true the reality of it as a penetrating force within me. It is an expression of my being. It is something which a mental force of allowance and permitting, which manifests itself throughout my body, naturally also mind. Patience itself is mind, is a mental factor. Try to sense something of it, this very moment. And let it be there, an openness in you. An openness which either likes or dislikes, which does not criticize or condemn, which is there.
Vi talar ofta om tålamod som om det vore en ägodel och ger oss inte tid att känna efter vad det egentligen är. Det är en penetrerande kraft, mental kraft, som i sin natur inte strävar och vi inte försöker bevisa att den är uthållig, utan är på något vis också ger upp lite grann. Så vi skulle inte missa realiteten av att känna den här kvaliteten i vad tålamod är. Att den är genomträngande och också i hela kroppen ett tillstånd av tålamod. Tålamodet har inte like eller dislike, den
preferring or pushing away.
Ja, just det. Maybe. Arbetar inte med sympati eller antipati, tar åt sig eller stöter ifrån, utan bevittnar och är hela tiden en kvalitet som är där.
The lack of this mental force in us causes us a lot of trouble, especially in this kind of practice of mental training. Who has not experienced that, or who has experienced that? In its extreme form, we call it restlessness, tremendous troublesome state of being when we are impatient. It is a perched upness in us. Everything is up. We are not given and open. We are perched up towards something we even don't know. We just know that moment we cannot accept what is here. And it is very feelable through the body and very uncomfortable. Who hadn't this feeling of extreme uncomfortableness where you felt, I can't stand it anymore, I'm dying. Something is going to burst or to happen.
Vi upplever kanske tydligare avsaknaden av tålamod och hur det skadar och förhindrar vårt meditativa övande. I sin extrema form så är det rastlöshet. Det är en sorts inte öppet tillstånd, en sorts upplåsthet som inte ger efter och som inte accepterar vad som är. Och det är enormt obekvämt att inte ha tålamod. Det är obekvämt att vara rastlös i hela kroppen. I sin extrema form så klättrar man på väggarna. Eller ja, man känner att man vill explodera av rastlöshet.
I like you to become aware of this mental force in you. When you are more aware in this, in a loving and open way, rather than a fighting way, you will become very sensitive also to the impatience in other people. You will not react to their impatience with anger, which we usually do, but you may be able to understand this powerful force of impatience and may be forgiving if in forgivingness meet that person, or you may be able to help even overcome impatience in somebody, or just be quiet and observe and not scold or condemn, because the condemning mind itself has some element of impatience in it. And this will be, it's very interesting to see how much, how fast impatience deteriorates to violence and to outbursts and chaotic situations.
We can. Kan göra oss medvetna om den här kvaliteten lite mer, vad det är, tålamod och i sin motsats då rastlöshet, och lära oss att se den i andra, se hur andra lider av den, inte med fördömande då utan förlåtande, hjälpande snarare, en hjälpande anda när vi ser att andra runt omkring oss lider av det. För det ligger i sin natur att om vi skulle fördöma, det är inte tålmodigt att fördöma rastlösheten då i andra. Så då har vi ja, också lägga märke till hur nära rastlösheten är till total förblindelse, kaos.
In a course like this, since it is so tailored, so constructed, constricted in its constitution, the impatience comes very quickly out, for we have no things here to distract us and to mask impatience up, to mask. By that I mean where we can go to when we feel impatience or discomfort and can do something else where we can forget our impatience. Here we are more or less forced through the restrictedness of this situation to encounter that impatience. Sitting in 1 hour, not being able to talk, not having any music, nothing to listen to, which is exciting or interesting, nothing to eat. Very, very, actually practically nothing except my bare existence. No play, no distraction in any way. So naturally, the impatience comes much more obvious into our range of experience. You can make that short.
Finns det något ord för inte tålamod? Finns det något ej-tålamod? Otålamod?
Otålighet.
Otålighet. Otålighet är nog jag. Ja, just det. Vad är det då? Nu när vi sitter så här och i sån här retreatkurs så kan vi inte, så märker vi väldigt tydligt hur då vår otålighet, hur den kommer upp, och vi kan inte gömma den, vi måste möta den här. Vi kan inte gå in i musik eller äta bort den eller stå på tvn eller på olika sätt fly från den, utan vi måste liksom titta, möta vårt sinne här.
And part of the task of a Dharma teacher, a good teacher, is that it tests a little bit and heightens moments where your patience is put at stake, where your impatience has faces yourself. So let it come to you when you feel this, and instead of condemning and charging against and reacting negatively, see it as your chance to learn, to prove, to strengthen this mental force in us, patience. There is the very famous story of the teacher of Milarepa, who tested his disciple to the utmost in patience. He asked him to build a house, small stone house. He builds it and is excited, and builds it with the expectation that he will receive great approval and praisings from his teacher. He's already goes and bows to the master. Master, I am ready with that house. The master comes, looks at it, and kicks it over. It shambles in 1,000 pieces. He turns around and says, "Now you can build it again." He was a very devout student and an earnest one. Wordless, he goes about, collects all the shambles, builds it up the second time. Master comes. He thinks, "This time I will harvest the praises. I will harvest the approvals, the appreciations." The second time, he tumbles everything over, almost discouraged. The disciple looks about, not daring to react, and he follows the demand of the teacher to build it up again, the third time. He was totally wrong having it built the third time that he would have had any approval of his teacher. He kicked it over again. And this happened the fourth time. He was almost at the end of despair. Almost no energy left for a new beginning. But the faith he had in the teacher that he was doing the right thing, and the faith in the teaching, he built it up again. And the fourth time, that house shambled. And he built it up the fifth time with the last of his energy, with the last of his belief, with the last of his efforts. And when the master came, he looked at him. He accepted the house that moment. He fell down, the disciple, and experienced a deep enlightenment experience. Thanking the teacher for having him given this test, for he felt suddenly a tremendous strength and a tremendous confidence in himself, a tremendous allowance and patience which was unshakable.
I en sån här retreat så sätts ibland tålamodet lite på sin spets. Vi prövas lite. Och när vi märker det så ska vi igenkänna då att det här är ett utmärkt tillfälle just att förstärka den här kvaliteten, tålamod. Det berättas om Milarepa att han fick en lång skolning i övande av tålamod. Han fick av sin mästare tillsägas att bygga ett stenhus. Och han fick bygga det i tystnad och bygga det här huset 5 gånger. För varje gång det var klart då, så rev mästaren och sa att det inte... Och det var en sorts övning i tålamod. Och 50:e gången då, så när han var totalt utan kraft kvar men ändå tålmodigt liksom, troende, hade visat att han hade den här, att han hade övat upp den här kvaliteten otroligt stark, då godkände mästaren. Då tackade han mästaren för att han hade fått genomgå ett sånt enormt övande.
I think I have it wrong. I think the last time he kicked it over again. The fifth time. Who knows that story? He kicked it over the last time, and that moment he became totally disarmed the Milarepa, the student, but open and given. He gave up to hope, to expect, to wait for something to come to him because he did something. He was not impatient anymore. He was just open there, space, boundless, just being present. And the master recognized that, and because at the moment he also fell down to the floor and prostrated and expressed something through his being where you could pick up. He finally got the idea of being patient, non-reactive, accepting, not proving. Wonderful. The greatest force of balance is patience. Keep it in mind. It can be a very great company to you.
Den största
kraft
av balans i vårt sinne, det är just det här tålamod. Och den här historien var visst så till och med att det femte huset också revs ner.
I, myself being a great animal lover, I compare the force of patience with the elephant. If you ever observed an elephant in the wilderness walking, very safe, one foot after the other, bringing down to Mother Earth. He walks safely, openly, he appears like not expecting, not fighting. There could happen that moment chaos or great excitement. He would just be there in his expansion. Fits, doesn't it? The quality of his walking with a quality of patience. You see, patience also you can see as an open relationship or a flowing relationship. I like to see it too. Why flowing? When I am open, not expecting, when I am patient and let it happen, and then is nothing there here, no qualities which can disturb, the energies can flow with the situation, with wherever you go, flowing relationship, see? If you have this deeper meaning of such a force, it's a mental force, a mental factor, which colors our consciousness, which comprises my state of being, this moment when it manifests itself, is very helpful. You can associate with these images, with with these images, with these pictures, with the how patience manifests itself. And you can by that perhaps have an invitation to fall yourself into it, you see? Rather than you just knowing that patience is proving, I must endure. See, different. People have that too. Can change you in a minute. You find yourself upset and impatient, could do something. You remember the elephant. You remember the flowingness of relationship. You remember that patience is accepting and not fighting and not proving. You may come even to a smile, a little bit sense of humor. And really feel how much it troubles us, the lack of this quality of patience. It's a great parami, it's a pure force of the mind. Parami, a pure force of the mind. Please cultivate it.
Tålamodet är en väldigt stor kraft och för att jämföra tålamodet med elefanten. Man kan tänka på en elefant som går, hur den går det ena steget efter den andra, väldigt mjukt och noggrant. Och den tittar noga, den väljer alltid egentligen den bästa vägen när den ska gå upp för ett berg. Samtidigt är den är där och noga. Och så lite, inte klump, utan lite gracil egentligen. Och i våra relationer kunde vi jämföra det där sättet att röra sig. Tålamod förväntar sig ingenting. Inget kan störa. I och med att det inte är bundet till några förväntningar så kan vad som än händer, var helst du går, så kan ingenting egentligen kullkasta ditt tillstånd. Det är heller inte ett tillstånd där man försöker bevisa någon sorts uthållighet. Utan det är ungefär som elefanten. Samtidigt finns det en kvalitet av humor i tålamodet. Och det är viktigt det här med tålamod. Bristen av tålamod plågar oss enormt mycket. Och det är verkligen en av sinnets renande krafter som vi bör uppodla.
Does he do well again? So now let us go to the next. To the next grade 8. Next mental force, which can support us a great deal on this path to my completion, to the path toward, on the path toward my understanding myself. That is the mental force of devotion or of faith. Faith. That is actually that force which also is the absence of doubt. It is a form of confidence. When that is there, faith, confidence, or devotion, then all the nagging forces within me of doubt, of maybe even criticizing and condemning, become tremendous, weakened, or are not there, don't trouble me. Who has that experienced in this time, just in these few days? This nagging in us of doubt, of criticizing, of condemning. It is the lack of devotion. It is the lack of faith, of confidence. Now, just that form. We'll come to three types of confidence in a minute.
Den andra kvaliteten som är sinneskvaliteten som hjälper oss till ett balanserat sinne är hängivenhet, tro. Och frånvaro av hängivenhet tar sig uttryck som tvivel, att vi inte har någon tilltro. Och det finns alltså en naggande kvalitet i det där tvivlandet som hela tiden kritiserar och fördömer. Hängivenheten, det är istället dess motsats då. Det finns en tilltro och
Let us give another consideration for this, for the lack of faith that brings about in us that nagging feeling of uncertainty. Very nagging feeling, unsureness. There are three different kinds of faith or confidence. The least skillful one is the one when we put faith into a thing, into a situation, where we have total confidence in that. Total confidence in one person for one reason only. For the reason because it makes me feel good. It gives me pleasure. It makes me feel good. Gives me pleasurable feeling. Very fast do we have confidence in a situation. Very fast do we jump to give all our confidence, all our devotion, all our faith to a person. One of these actions I just mentioned, this giving faith to a person, we can, is close connected to what we call falling in love. What do? Then we give all faith to that person. Why? Because we get pleasure from it. That interacting, that being together with that other being, with this other woman or another man, gives us pleasure, good feeling. And without really investigating a little bit more, we give all faith, all confidence in it. What is the next phase of that? The next development. Rickard?
Disappointment.
Disappointment. It doesn't hold. We rely for all our happiness to that person, to that situation, totally forgotten that that person, that situation is subject to what? To impermanence. Huh? To change. It can't continuously be the source for our happiness. It changes, it has a consciousness. It has many types of consciousness. It has all hindrances. It has a lot of unwholesome karma. And that cannot be the source for my happiness. But I get blinded. That moment where I feel good, I forget about the rest, possibilities, and give all faith, all hope, all expectation is the same into that person, into that situation, or a new political system. Someone coming with a great idea, follow me, I can give you all this. And we hear a few words and it feels good and off we go. Someone telling you about a good place to go. Go there, it's fabulous, brings you lots of pleasure. Great romantic climate, wonderful beaches. You come there, it's nothing but stones and rocks, coconuts falling on your head, crabs biting you everywhere, mosquitoes biting you. That nobody wrote about it. Only the nice thing, a romantic picture with a moon in orange color under and beneath a palm tree. And off we go, we see it and off we go. Now, having only this picture in my mind and all this confidence that now at last I will have holidays of eternal happiness. Doesn't last long. How many times have we had these kind of experiences? There is a Vipassana course. Man, you must go and see it. You must experience it. Get a high. Peak experience waiting for you. And I'm starting to pack and prepare. What else shall I bring with me? Toothbrush and maybe my pack sack and everything ready. And I got full blown up, full of confidence. Now it's going to happen. Enlightenment at last before. Doesn't last long. Who has gone through that experience? For some at last, the first evening, when you are very lucky, it lasts till the next morning. When you're fortunate, it will remain just an hour before lunchtime. And it all has collapsed in the afternoon. All my confidence, I have nothing to think anymore, just there, you see. My faith in that. No, just because of what? I associated with the pleasant feeling. That was actually a trade, a very commercial thing, you see. Not different than everyone else, those squares we think they are commercial. Meditators can be very commercial too. So, you see, a very shaky situation, very unskillful faith. We call it blind faith. Sometimes it lasts longer, half a year being in love. Maybe a little longer. So you see, that comes because I am just concentrating to this kind of selfishness. What gives me pleasure? And then I give my faith. Faith is an opening. Faith is a gesture of surrender. Then I trust in a situation I have not investigated, and I have no relationship to it other than just the desire to get a good feeling, or associating it with good feeling, it is a very shaky situation. It is not a real opening, because this opening closes very fast afterwards. And disappointment follows, frustration follows. Even negative reactions such as hate can come. Who hasn't turned after being in love and being all trusting and open? Who has not turned into hate? See? So there is a higher form of, oh, maybe you say that.
Do I have to say something?
You can do that really short. I just elaborated on it.
Det finns olika kvaliteter av det här hängivenheten, tron. Och en kvalitet kan vara sån här blind tro då. Och den har som karaktäristiska att den är det som utgår från att den får mig att känna mig bra. Den ger förnöjelse. Till exempel en förälskelse. Man sätter all tilltro till den man är förälskad i. Och det är uppenbart att det kommer att övergå i sin motsats. Att man blir besviken. Att inte vara. Och det kan till och med bli massa vir i karma som ger upphov till hat och så vidare och så vidare. Det kan också vara ett politiskt system som man blir förälskad i på det där sättet. Som vi genast sätter all vår tilltro till. Eller en resebeskrivning. Eller en beskrivning till en Vipassana-kurs. Där vi ska liksom få alla våra förväntningar ska bli förverkade. Där vi ska liksom bli upplysta och få verkligen en god känsla, förnöjelse. Och det blir någonting annat, märker man ganska snart. Så den här det ligger en självisk kvalitet i den här hängivenhetskvaliteten då, i den här blinda tron. Den utgår hela tiden vad som ger mig förnöjelse och undersöker inte så noga ut och är egentligen ingen verklig, ger egentligen ingen verklig öppning. Ja, så finns det andra sorter också, kan vi säga.
So there is a higher form of faith, of this mental force in us, which doesn't, that is that confidence, which is not anymore because it gives me good feeling, but I put confidence towards some certain qualities and characteristics which I admire in a person, which I see that these qualities such as compassion, wisdom, diligence, effort, perhaps constant caring, these are qualities which I feel inspire me. I feel they are example for my inspiration, and I begin to have faith in these qualities. Then the person is just is more the background, not alone the person. And I have not confidence because it gives me good feeling, but I begin to understand the value of these qualities, and I feel these qualities as a source of inspiration for my unfolding, for my learning, for my development. It's a higher form of confidence. And I know, and I'm sure that we all of this of us are experiencing that kind of confidence too. Many of us, older students in particular, have confidence in or young, newer students have such confidence and trust in such qualities, associating it with friends or elder people or teachers, where you sense these qualities are coming through and they are for you as a source of inspiration and a good model for your development.
Det finns alltså en tilltro, en hängivenhet som inte baserar sig på bara goda känslor, utan att man i till exempel en annan person upplever kvaliteter som medkänsla, kärlek, uthållighet, omtanke och så vidare. Och man har mer tilltro då till egenskaperna och personen som har de här egenskaperna är på något sätt i bakgrunden. Men man känner att de här kvaliteterna utvecklar också mig. Och ur det uppstår en tilltro, en förlitan. Just det här goda kvaliteterna.
For example, there is a Vipassana meditation course. Someone talking to someone else. Well, I have never been there, but I know when these courses go on, they are doing good things. They talk about life and about wholesome quality to develop and purifying the mind and coming more to equanimity and balance. I don't know so much, but I have confidence in these qualities, and wherever such qualities are developed, I like to go, it's good. I have confidence in these particular qualities. So you don't know about the situation, but you have confidence, it's good, you see. You don't doubt, you don't criticize. You are open to that, you trust the situation. You send your friend to it. It's not based on blind faith. Go there, it's good for you. I have confidence. It will do good to your development, to your unfolding, to your growing, to your overcoming of your unwholesome tendency, your impatience. You can improve there. This kind of attitude.
Man kanske hör talas om en Vipassana-kurs och att man sysslar med att man där tränar sinnet och hur man tränar, hur man kommer i balans. Och sådana kvaliteter är man öppen inför. Och dit törs man också rekommendera sina vänner att resa. Det är bra för ens utveckling och växt.
It's a very interesting phenomenon in life. Without really learning much or knowing much, our mind, our consciousness, mental consciousness, somehow knows where to gravitate, or knows what is good basically, what is for balance and what is not for balance. It's a very interesting phenomenon. So now we come to the next and actually the highest form of confidence, of trust and devotion, that is that form when you don't rely on any of these two preceding ones. You don't put your confidence into situations or people who give you pleasure or good feeling, nor do you put your confidence in situations or people who represent and develop wholesome qualities, harmonious qualities, but you put your confidence into your own living body-mind process, into the knowledge and understanding which comes out of your direct experience. Your mindfulness through the development of awareness and through constant attention to your living organism here, to whatever arises in the mind and in the body, you gain gradually an understanding of the nature of yourself, of the nature of mental and physical phenomena. And that in terms gives you an insight, in understanding how this life functions with me, how that mind works with me, and how it works in others. You begin to understand why there is suffering and why we cannot be happy. You begin to understand the value of positive, the development of positive qualities. In other words, your confidence is put into your own livingness, into your understanding which comes out of this relatedness with you. And that is the highest. When the Buddha died, his chief disciple Ananda was a little upset, asking him, "Master, Master, who is going to teach us now when you are gone?" The Buddha said, "Don't be disturbed. Become an island unto yourself from the teachings I gave you. Hold on fast to this. Take refuge in it and have a burning desire to learn for yourself." From yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think that is enough about confidence.
Mm-hmm. Sinnet har en kvalitet som vet vad som är bra för det och vad som också är dåligt för det. Och nu kom vi in på den här sista kvaliteten av hängivenhet, den högsta formen av hängivenhet, som inte är då att man ger sin tilltro till det som ger en goda känslor, som känns bra i ögonblicket. Inte heller att man ger sin tilltro till människor som har upplevt goda kvaliteter av olika slag, utan att man ger sitt förtroende, sin tilltro till sin egen utveckling, till sin egen sinne och kroppsutveckling, baserat på sin egen upplevelse som kommer ur närvaro, mindfulness då, i sitt övande. Och den här förståelsen av sig själv som är både mental och fysisk ger en insikt, en förståelse om dels hur mitt sinne fungerar och dels hur andras sinne fungerar, och hur och man ser också då varför lidande uppstår och så vidare. Den här sista formen av tilltro, det är en tro till din egen förståelse som växer genom närvaro. Och det berättas att då Buddha låg på sin då för döden, och hans kärleks närmaste lärjunge Ananda frågade honom: vem ska nu lära oss? Då svarade han att Ananda skulle bli, han skulle bli ett ljus åt sig själv, att han själv så att han själv kunde lära av sig själv. Han skulle bli sin egen lärare.
So naturally, that type of confidence which is put into the understanding which comes out of my own insight into my own nature is unshakable. For example, you know that it is no point to hold on to feelings. You observe them as a phenomenon arising and falling away all the time. You know about the beauty of living in this moment, free and open. You see the foolishness of clinging and hanging on and grasping to something what has no relevance to this moment, you see. No one will be able to argue with you. You know, you have that confidence, because what you know comes out of your living organism. It tells you this. You are practicing awareness each moment to each arising consciousness. You are awake. You have no time to hold on, to accumulate packages, feelings from long times. You don't run into the future, what hasn't occurred yet. You don't need to worry. You understand this being here and now through your practice of awareness to each moment as it arises. Nobody can argue with you. You will also not need to assert that. You have patience, you have graciousness in you, because you know for yourself, and you don't need to prove what you know either. It's a marvelous situation, this type of confidence. Lets us really come to rest. It totally takes away this nagging force in us of uncertainty and insecurity. So now, do you think it's necessary?
Sure. I'll try. Den här sista tilltron, den är en förståelse som inte kan skapas i grunderna, utan man vet att det är ofruktsamt att försöka behålla känslor, men det är fruktbart att leva i ögonblicket. Det lönar sig inte att hålla i det som är förgängligt, utan i övandet att vara vaken finns ingen tid över åt att gräma sig eller att vara förtvivlad inför framtiden. Och då nu ditt dövande i närvaro förankrar dig, så behöver du inte, det är ingenting som man behöver bevisa vare för sig själv eller för andra, utan det är i sig en tro på sig själv, en vila som är mycket, som tar bort all den här naggande tvivlet och som ger osäkerhet.
So the way of the Dharma is really to transmit this type of confidence to us, or to help us develop. A Vipassana course like that may contribute tremendous to this, for it is leading us to look and inside us, to understand this living organism, how it expresses itself mentally and physically. And as I begin to experience more of this process, naturally the force of confidence increases. The feeling of being myself, of being on the earth safe, increases too. Stand on your two feet, I say. Sense it. Have balance. Allow the force of balance to come through you. See, with that all develops confidence, a very wonderful force, mental force, for harmonious living, for quiet living, once more for loving living. One who has no confidence to himself or herself cannot love, because there's always fear, there's always uncertainty. Only someone who feels secure can love. Two?
Yes. En sån här Vipassana-kurs då vi går in i oss och upplever hur vi fungerar, hur sinnet fungerar, hur upplevelserna i kroppen är, kan ge ett stort förtroende, en tilltro och en säkerhet som är helt jordnära, som handlar om att man kan stå på marken och vara i balans och uppleva att man genom detta äger tilltro till sig själv, och just därför kan man leva ett stilla liv, ett enkelt liv, och också ett liv som, där man har en stillhet att ge kärlek till andra ur. För just den här att man har tilltro till sig själv, att man har en säkerhet. Det är just basen för att man ska kunna älska andra också.
Another powerful force of aid for our practice and our life is what they call in Pali dana, or generosity. It is the force of giving, of sharing. It represents the force of non-greed, of letting go, of not holding on and clinging, but of open up and sharing and giving. Strengthens the factor of non-greed. Greed is one of the three roots of all unwholesome actions in this world among humans.
Den sista stärkande mentala kvaliteten för vårt utvecklande kallas för dana, som betyder generositet, en villighet att dela, att ge med sig, att inte hålla i, och det är en motsats då till girighet. Och girighet är en av de till en av de tre rötterna till som skapar lidande i världen och den ohälsosamma förhållanden.
Being in the state of giving, sharing, of being non-greedy, giving and not holding on. What does it create among human beings, this quality of behavior? Does it not help toward harmonious relationship? Does it not create abundance and harmony, joyfulness and pleasantness and happiness? Whoever loves a miser who cannot give a thing? How long does a relationship last if there is one of the partners nothing but selfishly holding on to everything she or he has, possesses, owns, or that's enough.
Den här kvaliteten av att kunna dela med sig och ge skapar mycket godhet och öppenhet och bra saker, kärlek omkring en. Och hur länge kan man älska någon som är sniken? Som i ett förhållande till exempel, någon som alltid håller i och inte delar med sig. Det blir ohållbart, ohälsosamt.
So our life, our environment, our friendships, our interrelatedness with life benefits from generosity, enhances relationship and life. But the most significant meaning of generosity is that it is a very powerful force when it is cultivated toward the liberation, toward enlightenment of mind.
Våra liv gynnas på alla sätt av givmildhet, våra relationer och så vidare. Men främst gynnas också vårt mind, som får vårt sinne, som får där det blir en grund där upplysning kan hända.
You see all that? Yeah.
approximately.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why? Because generosity is representing that we give up desire. The force of desire is what keeps us bound to all kinds of things, which is a tremendous force of hindrance. And in generosity, we learn to open up and to give up also desires. For this generosity is not only referring to what we have to give away, but also what we perhaps know and sense, and our energies we give openly. We give openly our wisdom, we give openly our time. We learn in that giving, also on the material things, we learn in that giving to let go of our personal desires. It is an act of selflessness, of non-greed. And going toward my awakening is just that. It's always giving up. It has that characteristic of giving up. I have to give up my clinging to the feeling. I have to give up my cravings. I have to give up those doubts, that restlessness, that violence, that indulgence, that wrong action, that wrong speech. I have to give up practically everything what I have around me and within me, when you become a little bit more accurate. And it is hard to give up. We like to live in these habits we have developed. So in the act of giving, in practicing generosity or dana, there I üben, practicing myself in this way of dharma, in this act of letting go, of not clinging, which is so important on the path of liberation, on the path of attaining clarity of mind. So generosity is a representation of that. Giving up, letting go, self, being selfless. Mm. No, that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Generositet är i sin motsats ha, desire, ha, att samla på sig, att ha. Och det är inte bara en fråga om att man i sin generositet delar med sig av ägodelar eller föremål, utan också att man bjuder på sig själv. Att man ger av vad man vet och vad man känner, och att man delar med sig av sina energier och inte minst av vår tid. Det ligger någonting i att man avstår från sin personliga önskning och övar här en osjälviskhet. Och det är viktigt då, om i vägen mot upplysning, att som just har som karaktäristiskt kännetecken att den alltid ger ut, alltid ger upp tvivel, habegär, fel tal. Egentligen ger upp allting både inom och utom en. Och detta kan vara svårt, för vi älskar att leva i våra vanor, till exempel, som vi är bundna vid. Att ge upp dem då, det i dana, generositet, till exempel. Det är alltså ett övande här, generositeten, att låta gå, att inte hålla i, och det är viktigt på dammas väg eller på frihetens väg, för att vi ska få klarhet i våra sinnen.
The greed factor is very, very strong in people. This tendency in us to hold on and not letting go. And it is very hard for people to give. Just look at yourself. How willing are we in giving when it comes to share my energies, doing something which is not asked for, or which is asked for? Sharing my efforts, contributing my efforts. It's hard for us. That is a form of giving. How do I hold on to my time? It's my time. Don't bother me. Also in letting go of material things, how do we hold on? It's very difficult for people to give. There are therefore, of course, different forms of givers, the scriptures say, form of givers, which are maybe compared as beggarly givers. They have to think about it, what they give away. They have to look at it several times before they can let go, and then they might even take it away. Then there are those who are a little bit more open in giving, more friendly givers, not so considerate. Then there is a form of givers which doesn't concern anymore whether to give or not, they just give. Energy, time, help, advice, physical help, physical things as far as it is possible. There are those one can name perhaps kingly givers, open in giving, big in giving. So far.
Vi gick vidare på det här, dana, generositet, frågade hur villiga är vi att dela med oss av vår tid och vår energi? Det finns olika typer av givare också. Det finns givare som är tiggande givare, som tänker över ett par gånger om de ska ge någonting och sen kanske ångrar sig och tar tillbaka. Och sen finns det givare som tänker över och så kanske ger sig så småningom. Men så fanns det också kungliga givare som utan alls att vare sig tänka på det, utan att ens reflektera över det, är stora i att ge.
Giving is a powerful force. Its highest form of giving is when it is connected with wisdom. When you give and share, where you have an understanding and you let your giving and the objects of your giving, your time, your energies flow toward those beings, toward those situations where you allow, where you can open hearts in such a way that they begin to understand themselves and become more confident in themselves and become self-efficient and become or can move toward their own completion. That would be the highest form of giving, when it is connected to wisdom, when it isn't just giving to make you happy or make you feel good, which is a good form of giving. It does represent non-greed and sharing. But the safest way is when it is combined with wisdom. Many forms of giving can not be so helpful when there is no wisdom. I can give you many examples, but we have no time anymore. If you want to know, you come to me. Mm-hmm.
So. Givandet är en otrolig kraftfull sak, och om den är kopplad med vishet och förståelse, så kan det vara en mycket stor kraft, då det också kan hjälpa andra att verkligen förstå sig själva, att hjälpa andra på deras utveckling, att förverkliga sig själva, att ge utan vishet kan kanske inte, kan i vissa tillfällen kanske vara ha motsatt effekt.
Well, perhaps one example of misunderstanding of giving giving without wisdom. I have a student in Los Angeles, very beautiful one, and very generous. And he gives away, but he gives away indiscriminate. He helps various people, and mostly he doesn't think about it, just gives. And then I have found out that one got some help, some money, because she liked to drink alcohol, like to get high on that. And some other one got some money to buy some drugs. We didn't know that. We just helped because he was asked to help. He felt it's necessary, I give. So that is giving without wisdom, and then you support in people wrong tendencies. So as in all things what we do, when there is wisdom lacking, even the greatest generosity is not so very useful. However, for the person itself who gives, that moment of giving, he has demonstrated non-greed, and it is a noble act. Gradually, one can learn right giving. One can cultivate the wisdom in for these forms of dana or generosity.
Rut gav ett exempel på hur felaktig generositet kunde ta sig uttryck i att någon fick pengar som gick, någon gav bort pengar och det gick åt att köpa alkohol för, eller i annat fall att det gick åt, och det visste inte personen i frågan, men det, i annat fall gick det för att köpa droger. Och det, på det här sättet så var det att ge utan vishet. Och det stödde då i de här fallen fel tendenser i de här som fick gåvorna. Alltid är dock givandet ett tecken på icke-girighet. Och man kan öva det här danande, dana. Man kan öva givmildhet. Och det är alltid en, det är ju, det är en ädel akt att göra.
So as, however, our practice in meditation, in looking into yourself, progresses, we learn, we come to wisdom in ourselves, we come to understanding, and our act of generosity and our understanding of this quality of giving becomes matures too. And it will be, it is no problem as you begin, as you have more wisdom in yourself. You will give without thinking about it, without deliberation. You will know when there is necessity to give. You will open up your being when there is a call, when it is needed. You will share your energies. You will be open. You have no protection for yourself. You're not holding on. You will more have eyes for what is there and what is needed. The eye of compassion develops in the maturing of your generosity. And then giving is a giving which kind of reflects back. You get back your giving by experiencing the joy where you have shared, where you have given, where you have touched life. You will also understand one great feature of life. Life is giving, it's not receiving. It's more giving. And keep in mind this very carefully. On whatever level you find yourself and ability to give, give and be generous. It makes a good feeling, provides a happy heart, creates good relationship, and it practices yourself in giving, in letting go, in not clinging.
Forgotten. Where is it?
When you don't smell anymore, where is it? It's gone. Then it arises again. All types of consciousness arise and fall. Our guest here, our newcomer here. Yeah, she should have to. There is a lot. Conscious. Yeah. Besides that a thing like incense smells lovely, rises our, lets arise our smell consciousness, I think it is a great aid for meditation. Has a wonderful atmosphere radiating, smoke coming like clouds. Somehow they represent to me a great way of seeing impermanence. It moves. It develops in different patterns, is very subtle. Perhaps the movability of our own energies one can recognize in it. Many things. So, along with the incense, there come other elements along which are helping us on this hard way of effort for meditation. For I believe by now we have found out that it is not that easy. Sitting and concentrating and keeping aware and sending my mind force again and again to the object. How many times have we failed? How many times have we become weak? How many times have we become discouraged? How many times have we gotten into anger, into reaction of a negative nature, either against myself or against the situation of sitting here, or even against the instructor or teacher, you may call. Or the one who shares with you here. Many times, hardly are we able to count these times. Now, since we spoke of those elements which disturb and help us or are responsible for these weaknesses in us, for this inability to concentrate, there come also qualities and elements which are very helpful. And I chose for tonight three which we like perhaps to know a little closer and look into their nature. Look why they are able to help us. We all know of them. But since we are working with mind, with mental forces, with mentality, it is a good thing. It goes along with this to go deeper into the understanding of these forces. In this case, of these forces, which are considered aids, helpers, great assistance for our practice. Maybe that far.